You're welcome back to the 9 till noon show into the second hour this Thursday. How's your week going? I hope it's going very well indeed. I hope you're able to enjoy the nice weather. It's not for everyone, but I always think of the bills, less lights, less oil, less gas. We don't use gas, but you know what I mean. And I feel people have more of a pep in their step, the more friendly out and about. Is that what you feel or find? Greg, I see in the cathedral in Letterkenny yesterday, I was in it, sorry, and was horrified to see a person inside the church begging. She told me in a message she was from Sri Lanka. I told her to leave, that her behaviour was disgusting. She pretended not to understand me. But as she went out the door, she was sticking out her bum to say, kiss my bum, smirking all the time too. She knew what I was saying. I was raging and ran the guards to report it, and I have that on record. Hi, the climate is always changing, but it was a beautiful clear sky this morning. Now just like look out your front window at the four obvious trails outside, all too dim out the sun. I would love to speak to someone a little bit more about that, because I speak to different people about different stuff. Now, there's planes flying over all of the time, and I see the trails at the back of the planes. It's not having no impact. They disappear really quite quickly. When there's different pressure, they hang about a bit more. But there are people, and it's not just like one or two, there are a lot of people that believe that airplanes are pumping out stuff to dim the sun. Now, the thing that my logical way of thinking in relation to this, and other people will see as illogical, is the level of complicity and secrecy that would be required, something that I'm not sure people are capable of. So in terms of those that manufacture the fuel, for an example, they would have to be adding whatever chemical it is to their fuel. Ryanair, Aer Lingus, every single airline in the entire world would also have to be complicit in it, because you'd imagine there'd be someone in the industry that says, you know, we're not going to be responsible for altering the climate, or indeed, as some believe, poisoning the population. Then you'd need governments to have bilateral agreements to say that this is what we're going to do on a global scale. Because these flights, for an example, are often flying over us, or going from Britain to the United States. So they'd have to have an agreement between the United States and Britain, including Donald Trump, to say that, right, we will load this stuff onto the airplanes and then dump it over Donegal on the way past. And I just really find it hard to believe that anyone can believe that that can be the case. And that no one has provided any significant evidence. But again, lots and lots of people believe in this. So I'm going to read the text in its entirety out of respect to the listener. Hi, the climate is always changing, but it was a beautiful clear sky this morning. Now just look out your front window at the four obvious trails outside, all to dim out the sun. If this succeeds and we are not poisoned by chemicals falling from the sky, what are we going to do if we lower the CO2? Will we prevent growth in tree, grass, plant life, crops, etc.? Will we all slow down? What will the population will eat? I think people really need to look up both outside and online. It's all documented. And again, these trails that come from airplanes aren't, they don't actually block out the UV. You know, you don't need direct sunlight for grass to grow, for trees to grow, for your solar panels to work. That's not how it works. But again, I'm very much each their own and live and let live. I just find it hard to believe that people believe that there are those clever enough in this world to do this in an organized fashion, and for people not to really know about it. It makes me wonder. Hi, Greg. Can we all say good luck to Donegal team this weekend in the Ulster final? Let's be very vocal from the start to the finish and make sure we rock Clonus on Saturday. We need as many flags as possible, so let's make sure we do our job as fans and take them so we stand out, and hopefully we'll have the cup back in the hills. Yeah, and flags will also, it makes the crowd look bigger too, so bring your flags and have fun on the day. And get your flags up around your houses as well, too. It's a big deal. Hopefully we can ride the wave all the way to Croke Park. Wouldn't that be nice? What about tickets, though? I was hearing from a couple of clubs that applications in for, you know, 300 or 400 tickets and they're getting 160 or what have you. Is everyone who applied through their club to get a ticket getting their ticket? Once those tickets have been allocated to the club, how then are they allocated to members? What's the criteria there? Maybe you've got something to say in relation to that. Johnny on Facebook says, It's got nothing to do with the sun, just like fluoride in the water. It's nothing to do with teeth and had nothing to do with the pandemic. The British government have admitted trials. That's something that has come out over the course of the last week. Thanks for that, Johnny. That's something that's come out over the course of the last week, that they're talking about maybe blocking the sun. I get where you're coming from. But anyway, maybe that's something we can dig into differently altogether. Right, let's take a break. It's Thursday, which means it's jackpot day on the bingo. So hopefully one of you is going to pick up a few grand.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Now, the Minister of State for International Development and Diaspora has announced €2 million in Irish aid funding to support 34 organisations working in schools and communities across Ireland. That minister is Minister Neil Richmond, and he joins us on the programme now. Neil, thanks very much for joining us. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Right, so talk to us about this fund, because there is a local Northwest interest in this too, of course.
There is, of course, and I'm delighted that Inishowen Changemakers will receive €100,000. Now, this is the 13th year that this particular organisation has received funding. There's amazing work being done by the likes of Denise McCool, Patsy Toll, and many people that many of your listeners might actually be familiar with. And the whole point of the Global Citizenship Education Fund is to look at organisations outside the classroom. We do amazing work through national and secondary schools around the country to talk about what Ireland does around the world in terms of our sustainable development goals, in terms of helping the most vulnerable, the people who are fleeing war, famine, dealing with gender-based violence. But a gap was noticed that how do we reach those who are outside the school system, perhaps who are maybe a little bit older, but who have an interest or want to learn a bit more, or indeed how they can apply this to the work of their own company or organisation when it comes to areas like dealing with climate change or just being more aware of things like fair trade goods. So delighted to announce €2 million to 34 organisations, every length and breadth of the country. They do amazing work. Many of these organisations have been doing it for some time, but I'm particularly proud of the work that's going on in Donegal through Inishowen Changemakers.
And is it, you know, we can be quite siloed in that we can sometimes only think of our what's happening in our immediate community or county or country. But I mean, you see the new generation coming through that seem more open to seeing our position on the earth, you know, as part of the community of earth. Is that part of this?
Absolutely. And I suppose, Greg, you and I are relatively more or less the same generation. We grew up in a different time where the access to social media and the internet just simply wasn't what it was today. So bar listening to wonderful radio stations like your own or national media or reading physical newspapers, perhaps we weren't aware of what was happening in the world to the same extent the younger generations today literally go around with access to the world in their pockets, their school bags or handbags through social media. But one of the key things that I'm constantly trying my best to get the message out about around the country is that what happens around the world impacts us. When there is war in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, when there's famine in Sudan, when there is persecution of women and girls in Afghanistan, the consequences and impact of that impacts us directly. Global instability leads to increased fuel prices, which means that our gas bill, our heating bill at the end of the week goes up. And we see that in relation to the longstanding Russian aggression in Ukraine. We see the situation in relation to Yemen and Houthi rebels firing at shipping vehicles, putting up the prices of food in our supermarkets. We also see one of the big discussions, and you and I have discussed it before, is there has been a massive increase in relation to irregular migration, for want of a better word. And I'm not judging the people who are fleeing war or famine or pestilence or whatever else, but the more we allow global instability, hunger and poor situations to happen, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, the more people will seek to flee, the more people who will risk their entire lives to cross the Mediterranean. And ultimately, that will lead to awkward discussions about the future of IPAS centres, community facilities and our response. Immigration is a good thing, but we have to be able to manage it to make sure we can provide the services for those who are coming here as well as those who are here already.
And there's also a factor too, and people might not want to hear it, but we can't ignore it either. If you've an issue with migration, immigration or what have you, is climate refugees where you know, potentially millions of people, unless we do something about it, if it's not too late, will be in uninhabitable areas and will go somewhere else to try and seek refuge from extreme weather.
And this is some of the work that Irish Aid in particular is doing on the ground. Regions and countries that are really impacted by that climate change is where they're experiencing their third drought in a row, where they see the increased level of desertification. We see crop failures. We see people having to move around. And when your crop fails and you're forced to move to other lands, that leads to conflict. It leads to less food for you and your family, the inability to sell to market, so it forces you to move. So what this global citizenship education puts a big focus on is in relation to climate change. Climate change isn't just about some sort of campaign. It's how it impacts your daily life, how your actions on one hand, in relation to what we do here, in relation to our own water and our own recycling, and Inishowen Changemakers are doing particular work on this, how that has an impact, but equally how big picture macro climate change will impact your life, will drive up the price of food, will drive up the price of fuel, and how we have to equip local communities with the ability to look at new irrigation methods, to look at new farming methods. And I was at a wonderful project, Greg, in Tanzania, where we have young farmers have been able to increase their yield despite impacts on the rainy season threefold over the last couple of years due to partnerships with Antashka, where we have farmers coming over to Antashka sites in Fermoy and Oak Park in Carlow to learn this new methods. It's a very small investment, but it is allowing that local community stay in place to increase their standard of living and to make sure that they're not just subsistence farmers, but they can actually sell to market and make their community a better place.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I'm not expecting you to be able to make any comments on specific localized things, because that's, you weren't briefed on this, and it would be completely unrealistic. But just want to give a scenario to you that we're covering at the moment. You mentioned IPAS centres. We have a small village called Ballyliffin in Inishowen, funny enough, and it's got a population of 90, and there's a hotel in that area currently seeking a Section 5 exemption for an IPAS centre, which could potentially house 170 people. As I say, I can't expect you to be able to comment on that specifically, nor am I asking you to do so. But there is a great concern in the local community, in the local business community, that such a change in population could have such a negative impact on a particular area. You know, as a government rep, would you have sympathy for a community like that? You know, they're looking on going, you know, this doesn't make sense. There's 90 of us here. It's a tourist area, four or five, you know, other businesses. And here's a hotel right in the heart of the town with potentially 170 IPAS people going into it if planning is approved. And, you know, it's very hard for people to deal with, Neil. You know, it's really hard. And people then feel they can't speak out for fear of being labelled far right or racist. And I know these people, there's no motivation in that regard to it, but they're just wondering, and they feel helpless too, Neil, you know?
Yeah, and they're really fair concerns. And one thing we have stated regularly is we don't want to see any town or village losing its hotel, because the hotel is, or the accommodation is, so central to the entire life. Yes, it's a great income generator in terms of tourism, but it is where the afters of the funeral, the First Holy Communion, the GA Club AGM often is held. I completely understand that it is the centre part. And what we have certainly been trying to do under Minister Colin Brophy is to make sure where there is need for a new IPAS centre or accommodation for those fleeing the war in Ukraine, that we avoid the use of very clear community facilities that are in use, particularly hotels. But more broadly, you know, I do understand those concerns. I stated from the get-go, immigration is a good thing, and I don't deviate that from an instance. But we, and I say this self-critically, Greg, we in government, we who are the public policy makers, certainly we need to learn the lessons of the last 18 months, that we do need to take a step back, that we do need to know that people who are raising legitimate concerns have a right to be listened to. Now, if you're going to throw a petrol bomb into a disused building or stand outside with a placard saying Ireland is full, it kind of negates your ability to make that argument. But we want to create the space where communities.
That's certainly not the case here. But I do know the instances that you'd be referring to. Just for clarity, Neil, go ahead. Sorry.
Totally. And as I said, I'm not talking about this specific proposal in that regard. But what I am saying in relation to all proposals is that the onus is on the government and our colleagues in the Department of Justice and the community outreach officers to provide that listening ear, to provide the real sense of understanding that we do need to make sure that if we are opening a new facility, that the community is recognised for that and supported. And I've covered the length and breadth of the country where I've seen community groups, including in my own constituency, who've benefited from new football pitches, new playgrounds, due to the fact they've taken in quite a lot of international protection applications, or indeed those fleeing the war in Ukraine. But absolutely, in relation to that specific case, Greg, we need to be able to have an open conversation with the local community. They need to feel like they not only feel like they're being heard, but they actually are being heard. And I look forward to working with my government colleagues, particularly the two local Fianna Fáil TDs and the two local Fine Gael senators, to make sure that their voices are heard and that whatever goes forward is done with the best level of buy-in that is possible, but particularly recognising the importance of a hotel in a county like Donegal, of course. That's
but the problem so is the hotel hasn't been actively used for, it was a hotel then housed Ukrainians and now the Section 5 for an IPAS. But you've given commitment today that if your colleagues raise this issue, that you will also have a look at that. Because again, Neil, and you know, we have a role here as a media outlet as well, you know, and we take that very seriously. I take it very seriously. I can't speak on behalf of the whole radio station. But like, you go through the Section 5s and Donegal County Council, there's 15, 16, 17 applications for IPAS centres in our county, Donegal. You know the size of it, in every little village corner. And you wonder, well, what's going on? How can one company from down the country have six applications for IPAS centres in Donegal? It doesn't make sense. But anyway, you've referenced that. Do you have finally, before I let you go, a view on Israel's participation in the Eurovision? Now, people might say, well, why are you asking a minister about the Eurovision? What's the significance of that? Well, you know, we have the statement from our government in conjunction with other governments recently. And, you know, in a way, Israel being precluded from something like the Eurovision might hit harder with the likes of the Israel leadership, you know, on an international scale than a statement from, you know, a foreign affairs minister. Do you have a view on whether or not Israel should be participating in a competition like the Eurovision?
To be honest with you, I can understand the sentiment around that debate. And I'll be quite frank, I'm not a massive Eurovision watcher.
Nor do you need to be.
Nor do I need to buy. And I know why people will say that this needs to be the catching thing. I'll be quite frank. My priority is the fact that for the last 65 days, we haven't been able to get humanitarian aid into Gaza. That we, for the last 65 days, we have dozens of lorries containing Irish aid, equipment, food, medicines that needs to get in to starving children. If a discussion over Eurovision moves the dial on actually getting the Israeli government to
show an ounce of humanity, great.
But to be honest, my focus as I meet with European ministers today is making sure that we actually get a ceasefire, but first and foremost, that we get food and medicine and stop children starving and being bombed to death in Gaza.
It's horrendous what's going on. Minister, thank you very much for your time. That's Minister Neil Richmond, Minister of State for International Development and Diaspora. As you would know, a hosepipe ban, as it's commonly known, has come into effect in Milford as a result of a sharp drop in water levels. The ban, officially referred to as a water conservation order, will apply for 6 weeks. In the short term, it might have to be reviewed. We'll find that out in a moment. And it was announced by Iscairn as part of efforts to safeguard water resources for essential purposes. Anthony Skeffington is Iscairn's Northwest Regional Water Operations Senior Manager. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us, Anthony.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
We're also in the company of Mairead Conlon, Iscairn's Water Asset Strategy Manager. Good morning to you, Mairead.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having us on.
I mean, at the end of the day, too, not at the end of the day, what a strange thing to come out with. Through the course of this interview, whichever of you feel best qualified, not qualified either, but you know what I'm saying, to answer the question, please feel free to jump in. Anthony, yeah. Shall I start with you? Okay. People, can you make the connection between people thinking it never stops raining and how could we be short of water and the reality on the ground?
Yeah, and just to put a bit of context into it. So on Tuesday, we confirmed water conservation orders for three areas on schemes nationally. They were up in Kells in County Meath on the Loch Bain scheme, Mullingar scheme, the Loch Oul Lake there, and then in for Donegal here, the Milford Public Water scheme served by Loch Columbkill. That order applies to customers supplied by public water in Milford, Kerrykeel and Remilton and surrounding areas only. And it's not for the rest of the county. It's just one scheme there in Donegal. So the water conservation order is issued in a bid to kind of safeguard water supplies for essential purposes. We have advertised in national papers and that around from the 2nd of May in line with statutory requirements prohibiting the use of water for certain purposes in domestic settings. It's not the commercial setting, it's only in the domestic setting. The water conservation order then prohibits the use of water for water through a hose pipe for certain types of usage, such as watering a garden or power washing or cleaning a car and stuff like that. Kind of, they're the areas that we're focusing in on. You're right. You know, it rains quite a lot, but I think we've been analysing, you know, rainfall over the last year in the Donegal area. We've a weather Metairn have a weather station there in the Inishowen area. And we have looked at rainfall records since last April. And if you look across every single month, the rainfall in that area has been below the long-term average every single month, except for August of last year. So that has a detrimental effect on our lakes, our sources that we use for water supply. We rely on rain to recharge all our sources during the winter period, and then we extract the water then during the summer period, and we use the water, we treat it, we use the water, we distribute it out to our customers. So that's the problem or the issue here at the moment. You know, it's just lack of rainfall into this particular source, and we've seen the lake levels drop considerably over the last number of months. So for example, just give you a quick stat, like, you know, from last September, we would have expected 724 mil of rainfall to fall. 724 mil, that would have been based on the long-term averages. We've only got 487 millimetres. That's kind of a drop of 33%, 35%. So that's the effect then. The effect is that we didn't get that recharge during the winter period for our lakes. So we're struggling just to keep up with water to treat for that particular area.
Traditionally, obviously, it seems like we're operating at the capacity of this water supply. If we are seeing a change in climate, potentially less rain, we don't necessarily know how it might affect areas specifically. What are we doing going forward to mitigate this? Because we don't want to be dealing with this on an annual basis.
Yeah, I'll hand over to Mairead. Mairead has good data on that.
Yeah, so as part of our National Water Resource Plan, we looked at all our supplies nationally, and we looked at the long-term trends, and we looked at how population will grow and where population will grow, and we looked at where we might have increased water usage for economic needs for commercial businesses. And as part of that that assessment, we did identify that there is an issue at this source, Loch Columbkill, and it is proposed that as part of a larger scheme, we are going to interconnect a total of 8 supplies in the Inishowen area, which will include like Fannid, Buncrana, and the Inishowen supplies itself, to create a larger interconnected supply and develop better interconnectivity so the customers in the Milford area could have access to supply from other sources. And that's part of the preferred approach which we've identified through the National Water Resource Plan. We do acknowledge it will take time to develop out all these schemes. There is significant infrastructural development required, and there is the development of 2 new abstractions as well, which will require a planning process. So all that is ongoing, and is, you know, we will be reviewing our investment plans and looking to prioritise those projects as time goes on. And in the interim, I suppose, what we do at all our supplies, and this will not be just unique to the Milford area, this will be across many of our supplies where we have identified deficits, We are looking at managing demand as best we can. So we have leakage reduction. We've done a lot of work on leakage reduction over the last few years across all supplies. And we also look at demand management. So ensuring that we're prioritising connections for housing in the area, and where we have commercial users coming on, that we're having conversations with them about how they can reduce their usage going forward.
Do we have the leakage figures to hand? Not putting anyone on the spot here. The last figures I saw, you know, in terms of our loss of treated water was in the 40% region, I believe. And that, I think the public find that particularly frustrating, and you'll often hear anecdotal reports of, you know, water running out into a street for 3 or 4 weeks. And I'm not saying that's the case or necessarily expecting you to comment on that directly. But in terms of leak reduction, do we know in terms of percentages the inroads we're making in relation to that?
Yeah, it's, you know, leakage is a huge area for the business. You know, we're certainly targeting it as a major investment item for us. You know, we're investing a lot of money in that particular area. For Donegal, it's about 45-46%. That's the leakage or the unaccounted for water rate for the county. But for the Milford area, for example, we've targeted that now over the last 5 months or so. We've been monitoring, as I said, you know, the amount of the lake levels there, and we're trying to reduce back the amount of water that we're taking from that source. So we're doing two things. We're focusing in on finding and fixing leaks. So in Milford, for example, over the last number of months, 3 to 4 months, we've got the leakage down to approximately 20% in that particular area. And we're extending that out now into the Milton and the wider area. And we have guys on the ground that are continually finding and fixing leaks. And they're our own crews. You know, they're part Uisgearn and they're part local authority crews, the guys that are still with the local authorities that are working for us. They have great knowledge on the ground, and they are the guys that know the network inside out, and they are working hard in that area, and the benefits can be seen there, you know, in those stats that I've just outlined. The other thing that we did during the winter period as well is that we augmented supplemented the supply for the Milford area from other sources where we have extra water from Cranford, and also now we're taking extra water from the Milford area, or sorry, the Letterkenny area. So that has reduced the effect on the lake as well. And we're seeing some good data coming back that the lake level is not dropping as quickly as we thought it would be. And what this water conservation effort is kind of just doubling down on our water conservation message that we have been, I suppose, advertising over the last number of months, and ensuring that the community work with us just to try and reduce the impact on the lake. It's early on in the year, and you can see even in the last couple of weeks, the number of weeks going forward, the weather is good. You know, we don't want to impact on that either. You know, so we want to be mindful of that. But we'd like to work with the communities to ensure that water conservation is to the fore of their mind.
Murray, this is just a general question. You know, people go to foreign countries where there's far less rainfall than there is here, and yet there seems to be an abundance of water. We seem to sort of, you know, fill the bowl and then empty the bowl and then wait for the bowl to fill again. Is there any plans to pursue obtaining the water, you know, from underground or whatever it might be into the future? Or is this model that we employ the best way for our country and just the way we're going to be doing things going forward?
Yeah, so as part of the National Water Resource Plan, we would have looked at everything nationally. And, you know, as you're right, we do have enough rainfall for our water needs over the next 25 years. That's what we have determined. It's just that maybe with historical development that we developed sources and settlements outgrew the sources of supply. And, you know, as we have said in the media before, there has been a lack of investment in water services over the last 20 years, and we are on catch up now. And we do need to develop new sources of supply to sustain the growth that we have seen. We're also in a high growth scenario. Our population is growing. And, you know, to meet that need, you know, we have been using the old assets, the old water treatment plants, the old sources. And a lot of our water treatment plants are working beyond their capacity. They're working at 24-hour capacity all the time. So that does put us in a situation that we have a greater risk of drought in Ireland. Once the National Water Resource Plan preferred approaches are developed, we should reduce that risk, and we're trying to work towards a scenario where people have a better level of service. So we're targeting a 1 in 50 level of service. So what that means for the customers is that they should have less than a 2% chance in any given year of having a significant outage from water supplies. And that would hopefully reduce the need to bring in these water conservation orders. But as you know, Anthony mentioned, you know, this is a proactive measure that we're taking now to ensure the supply for essential uses as the summer progresses and to protect the environment. You know, we do have customers do have their water and they're not experiencing an outage.
Yeah. And there's no overnight switch offs or things like that. In terms of this being a 6 week, is it a suck it and see, or if we don't have significant rainfall over the 6 weeks, it could perhaps be extended?
It certainly could be extended. This was our first measure, our first go at this, you know, and, you know, there are a number of other, I suppose, sources as well, both regionally and nationally, that are stressed at the moment. So we'll be monitoring this over the next number of weeks. We're looking at the data, we're looking at our sources and that, and we're seeing what sources are stressed and stuff like that.
In relation to that, Anthony, are there any areas on the brink off the top of your head? Because, you know, maybe people in those areas might think twice about, you know, how they use the water. So obviously we know there are issues in Milford. Like anecdotally, even passing Loch Salt, it looks to be 8-10 feet down on what you'd normally expect it to be. I'm sure there's still an abundance of water there, but is there any places that sort of are on the brink?
There would be, yeah. You know, there's a potential drought in the Bug Cran area there. Loch Doo is the lake that serves Slavery, a water treatment plant. That one springs to mind. We're also mindful of the Letterkenny area and the Loch Mourne area as well, where we would have issues previously. But at the moment, you know, they're holding steady. But the message to everybody is to work with us and ensure that they conserve water, that water is conserved and not used previously, you know. So that's the key message here.
And is this voluntary? I mean, of course, this has been introduced, right, and people are being asked to adhere to it, but are there any consequences for not doing so? I'm not trying to promote that, don't get me wrong, but, you know, that we're in the carrot stage here, I presume, and asking people to adhere to this, but, you know, are there consequences if someone willfully does not?
Look, as I said, the purpose of the Water Conservation Order really is to protect water supplies for essential use, and Mairead has outlined that as well, for, you know, the essential use, such as medical settings, essential for businesses and fire services. Customers who don't adhere would be liable for a fine, you know, and the idea here is that if somebody is caught, you know, using water that, you know, that they would ring into our call centre or whatever, or somebody can ring into their call centre. But kind of, we want to work proactively with people. We have put in water conservation orders in previously in other areas and nationally, and I don't think we have fined anybody.
Yeah, they've
as
worked
such.
Quite well.
I think and it worked quite well. It's kind of reinforcing the message here of a doubling down on our water conservation messages that we've went out previously. So we're not kind of here to kind of beat everybody over with a stick on it,
or a hose for that matter. We didn't mention this in advance, and we can chase it up afterwards. I know Ishgairn have an interest in Ladies Bay. There's work ongoing on there. Do we have an update on it? Keeps popping up in these EPA figures, and I know the EPA have said Ishgairn are conscious of that. We can chase it up off air, by the way. So not knowing right now is not a bad answer, but I don't suppose, Anthony, Do you have off the top of your head what the situation is in relation to investment there, or do you want me to chase it up with you once we finish?
Chase it up afterwards.
We will do that.
Actually.
Fair enough. Okay.
But what I would say is that there's huge investment in water services right across, both on the wastewater side and the water side in Donegal. You know, we've invested heavily over the last 10 years. 400 million springs to mind as the figure, and we have, you know, upgraded, I think, 7 water treatment works, and you should be able to see the work that we're doing on the wastewater treatment side as well. An awful lot of investment there, new water treatment plants put in places where there was untreated agglomerations previously. So we will continue that. And what's happening is, you know, over the last number of years, there's sustained investment now. And, you know, and that's critical. You know, previously, I know back in the 2000s when I was working with the local authority. It was sustained for a period of time, but now it's continuous, it's sustained, okay. And we are seeing the benefits of that. And we are getting to a lot of the issues that we need to get to. We need to get to.
And Mairead, finally to you, you know, and I've put this to housing ministers in the past, you know, one of the greatest challenges in terms of our meeting the housing needs, for an example, is access to resources, be it electricity or water, or sewage. Does this, Aaron, have a stance in relation to that as to sort of, you know, where we're at and where we'd need to be? Because for every 30 or 40 houses that are promised on an annual basis, that's 30 or 40 houses of water going in and sewage going out. And I think sometimes that's where our greatest problem lies in terms of fulfilling some of these targets that are set. I'm not asking you to comment on government targets, but just more generally to that point.
Yeah, so kind of coming back to the National Water Resources Plan, like that, we did look at the projected population growth that was set out in the National Planning Framework, and you know, a particular focus on the key towns that have been targeted for growth and for economic growth. So we are prioritising those settlements which are considered to be key growth areas. Where there may be deficits in the infrastructure now, and we are prioritising projects such as water treatment plant capacity increases, and as Anthony mentioned, the investment that we put into the wastewater infrastructure. So they're our priority right now to open up areas, you know, for the housing. And as we mentioned, as I mentioned about our measures in terms of when we have deficits at supplies, we are prioritising connections for housing and working with our commercial users to see what they can do to reduce demand.
Right. Mairead Conlon, Uisce Gearán's Water Asset Strategy Manager. Thank you very much for your time. Take care. And Anthony, thank you too as well for your updates.
Thanks very much,
Anthony
Craig.
Skeffington, yep. Uisce Gearán's Northwest Regional Water Operations Senior Manager. Thank you very much indeed. Let me see. Anthony commented on Facebook. And he says, the fact that 3/4 of the people think we're taking in too many people, letting a government TD off the hook as usual. The government are, the people are being consulted, and you off with that spin. Anthony, I just wish people could see the wood for the trees. You tell me another media outlet or another journalist in this county that's raising the issues of Ballyliffin with senior TDs and gets a commitment from a government TD, not from this county, that if government reps such as Pat the Cope Gallagher or Charlie McConnell Lugg raise the issue of Ballyliffin with him, that he'll give it on a national level particular attention. You know, think about it. Look elsewhere. Look online and in the papers and see how much coverage of that issue you can get. You will find, or certainly even reference to some of the details that we've been given. Try and find it and then ask your questions because I know you're very intuitive, but have a look around. Not many radio stations or individuals are raising these very local issues with national TDs. And if you can't see that, if you think that's letting him off the hook, well, I'm afraid, Anthony, me and you are never going to potentially see eye to eye on things like this. Now, as we mentioned in our previous conversation, sorry, the weather's sunny and it's going to be about 17 degrees. As we mentioned in our previous conversation with Uisce Gearán, a beach in Donegal is still not meeting minimum bathing water standards, according to the EPA's latest report, which was published today. Ladies Bay in Buncrana has again been rated as poor, one of only two beaches in the country to be given that designation, along with Sandemount in Dublin. Last year, the figure was 5, so inroads are being made. I'm going to be parochial because of time constraints straight away and focus on Ladies Bay with Amory Ryan, Scientific Officer with the EPA. It's really frustrating for locals and those that wish to use Ladies Bay, Amory, because we know what the problem is. And we're going to be getting a timeline from Uisce Gearán later this morning on when they hope to do work to improve that situation. But it is a problem that can be overcome.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. Good morning. So Ladies Bay in Buncrana has been classified as poor for the last 4 years, so 21 to 24. And you all know the main source of the pollution affecting the bathing water is untreated wastewater, which is basically released from the town's collection system. It's exacerbated by heavy rainfall, so there's a climate element to this too. But look, what's been done, the wastewater works was included as a priority area by the EPA, and Ishgeirin have progressed major upgrade of the collection system to improve performance and provide more storage, essentially to deal with the heavy rainfall. Because as we all know, and as we experienced, I think in August in particular, in the west and northwest, you experienced a lot of localized heavy rainfall. Which, you know, it doesn't help the situation. It's washing contaminants off of the land. It's washing stuff from the surface water collection system into the sewage pumping station. So look, I think the works that Ishgeirin have carried out will definitely make a difference. We hope to see an improvement in water quality in Buncrana this summer, this bathing season. A great facility for people to look at the current bathing, the water quality status is beaches.ie. So you can go on there, you can have a look at Buncrana, you can look at all the beaches in Donegal, almost all of which are excellent. You have three rated as good, and the one poor in Buncrana. So look, we're very hopeful that this summer we'll see the works that Ishgeirin have done. So they've already completed a portion, and the remainder, I believe, will be completed Q3 of 2025, so towards the latter end of this year.
Yeah, and of course, we'll be brief, Anne-Marie, we do appreciate your time. Our water is good, and very good. You know, we should be very proud of that. We're meeting standards and exceeding them too. And areas that have had problems in the past, we have seen investment that improves the situation drastically. So generally speaking, it's a positive picture with a couple of notable exceptions.
It is, and we have some beautiful beaches, especially up in Donegal. There's some great swimming spots, and these results are great, you know, in terms of sort of showcasing our beaches, the high quality of the water we have and the fantastic community we have. As we go into the summer months, you know, we'll all be looking forward to hopefully a good summer. Hopefully this isn't it.
Would you get out of that? Anne-Marie Ryan, thank you very much for your time, and maybe you can come up and sample our beautiful waters here. Take care. She's scientific officer with the EPA.